I'm gonna miss my flight.
Good.
It's not my problem.
Ah, skip that story. It's gonna be stupid.
That's a wild take.
That's a wild take, yeah. Skip that story. It's gonna be stupid.
And there's a second wild take. She didn't say anything. She didn't say stop.
She just kept going right through all your talking.
Maybe you should too. Hi, I'm Maria Bruno, head of U.S. Wealth Planning Research here at Vanguard.
And I'm Joel Dixon, global head of advice methodology at Vanguard. Welcome to our podcast series, The Planner and the Geek, in which we will discuss topics that are important to individual investors.
And we'll have some fun along the way. Joel, welcome.
Hi, Maria.
Good to be back in the studio with you today. I want to welcome our listeners to our latest episode of The Planner and the Geek. So today we're going to talk about a topic that is near and dear, I think, to all of our hearts, and that's planning for healthcare costs. So
yeah.
It's a topic that we all must deal with. Personally, it's one of the biggest questions that I get from folks who are starting to think about retirement. So it resonates, I think, with all of us, but particularly as we near retirement and then throughout retirement, making those choices around, you know, how to pay for healthcare costs and what healthcare costs look like. So it's a big topic. And in fact, a recent survey, this is a 2016 PwC Financial Wellness Survey. We'll start off with some interesting statistics. 38% of the boomers who were interviewed listed healthcare as a top fear about retirement. And in fact, only 5% of these individuals cited that managing their investments was a concern. So you can just see there's an overwhelming concern around how to manage healthcare costs. So I think it'll make for an interesting conversation.
Yeah, Maria, I concur, because it is certainly something that we hear a lot from clients and investors about throughout the course of their life sort of stages, the different healthcare considerations. So what we really want to talk about in the podcast today are really sort of three things. Sort of the healthcare cost and budgeting sort of situation in the working years, or pre-retirement. And then when you start thinking about retirement, how do you start thinking about projecting those healthcare costs and maybe trying to decide whether you are going to be able to meet your retirement sufficiency goals? And then finally, when you're in retirement, thinking about the sort of trade-offs between annual healthcare expenses, those ongoing each and every year costs, and then the potential issue of long-term care, and thinking about those maybe separately or differently, and how you might plan for those. Seem like a good group of topics?
More than enough to talk about.
Yeah.
Somehow I don't know how we're going to do it, but
yeah, somehow we'll get it all in, right? Well, I do think most people are generally aware that healthcare costs have been rising faster than inflation, because you can certainly see it on your own bills and how much your premiums have increased and your deductibles and so forth. But one of the stats that I have, this is from a study done by the Commonwealth Fund. Actually, so in 2017, 56% of Americans under the age of 65, or in number terms, 152 million people, had insurance that was through an employer. It may not be their own employer, it may be a spouse or another relative, but 56% had insurance through an employer. Surprisingly, I think, because oftentimes we hear so much talk about the Affordable Care Act, which some people call Obamacare and so forth, and just the whole political debate about that. Only 9% of folks, according to this study, under the age of 65 actually purchased on the individual market, and that would include the exchanges. The main way that people access healthcare is through an employer or an employer-sponsored plan today. And on average, and this is important for this discussion, especially as you transition to retirement, on average, employers subsidize about 75% of the premium in the under 65 employer-based health system in the U.S. today.
Okay, so Joel, let's talk about HSAs and why, what makes them interesting. So, triple tax advantages with a health savings account.
And
which makes
that,
it even
that sounds
better.
Good. That sounds good to me. What does that mean, Maria?
It's even better than a Roth or a 529.
No. Better?
Better.
Better?
All right.
No such thing as better than a Roth. Come on.
Oh, you know, because you invest in one. So the contributions are tax deductible. The account grows tax deferred. And then assuming withdrawals are used for qualified medical expenses, they're tax free.
So no taxes ever. if you meet the right conditions under the current law. Have to put in all those disclaimers for our legal
Yes, thank
friends.
You. I pause. I'm like, okay, with the proper legal caveats, yes. And what's interesting, too, is you don't necessarily have to incur those medical expenses in a year. So it's not one of these use it or lose it. The account can grow and continue.
Well, wait. Tell me, as you would say, Maria, tell me more.
So with the HSA, if you incur medical expenses throughout the year, you can choose to pay out of pocket for those medical expenses and not touch the health savings account. Now, granted, this is probably a benefit that not everyone may have the benefit to be able to afford doing that, but it does.
For high savers, it gives that.
Yes,
option.
For high income earners or high savers, yeah. You can kind of think about a health savings account maybe a little bit differently than you would as a traditional health account or a health insurance plan.
Well, like you said, it sounds like the combination of a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA, and that you get the tax deduction and you get the tax-free withdrawals, assuming that the right conditions are met.
Right, and there are limits. I mean, for 2019, an individual or an employer combined, you can contribute up to $3,500, family up to $7,000. So that's how much you can contribute this year to an HSA. If you're over 55 or over, I should say, it's an extra $1,000. So there's catch-ups, but they're different than the IRAs and 401ks.
Right. At age 50 there.
Right, so you can't do that quite yet.
No, not yet. Neither can you.
Something for you to look forward to, Joel.
Oh, yes. I will. So it does sound, though, like you could use that as another form of long-term savings, and the benefit being that, as you had mentioned just previously, you don't have to line up your healthcare costs or healthcare payments with the amount that you take out from the health savings account. So I could incur a cost today and then withdraw the money from an HSA 20 years from now for that cost if I wanted to, correct?
Correct, yes. You can. They sometimes we'll call it shoeboxing receipts, although you don't have to keep a shoebox. You can do it digitally with apps today. But you can actually go back and claim those receipts later and take the withdrawals, thus the qualified withdrawal criteria being met. I mean, there's really two ways you can use an HSA. One would be as a transactional account. The other would be as perhaps an investment account, as you just had mentioned. So with a transactional account, you still get the benefit of the tax deduction with the contributions, but perhaps you're using the money then to pay for the medical expenses versus considering it as an investment account and not touching the money and let it grow tax-free.
So it's really another way to get a tax deduction, at least on the deductibles that you might be paying out of pocket, which otherwise would be done with after-tax money. Oftentimes the premiums are with pre-tax money from an employer-sponsored plan. And now, but if I had to pay that $3,000 deductible, now if I had $3,000 that I contributed to health savings account, even if it's transactional, I would get a tax break on the $3,000
right.
And then pay those
right.
those dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's a big benefit.
Mm-hmm. Now, what to think about if you're picking an HSA, what to think about? I mean, certainly you want to look at the cost of the plan. Your employer, if they offer a high deductible plan with an HSA, you can choose through the employer. You have a portability option, so you're not necessarily, if your plan doesn't have good options in terms of either cost or investment choices, then there's a portability feature there that you can roll the money out of the plan as well, too. So some unique features there to consider.
Or use it as a retirement savings vehicle, as you said, right? I mean, if you're able to save extra, I mean...
Oh, absolutely.
We've even started talking about hierarchy around when would you save in an HSA versus other vehicles.
Yeah, so when you think about the savings hierarchy, certainly, we talk about this a lot. Save into the 401k up to the company match if you have that, right? That should be your first and foremost. And then, whether or not you're savings constrained, think about an HSA, certainly if you're not savings constrained, then that makes the choice a lot easier. Then you can go into the HSA, reap the tax benefits, and then consider it as a retirement account. But if you are savings constrained, think about it. Even if you use it as a transactional account, there may be some tax benefits there that may be material.
Yeah, we've started talking about different little nuances, like if you're going to make a $3,000 contribution to a kids 529 plan, for example? Would it make sometimes some sense to, if you're going to incur $3,000 of medical expenses, just make sure you, even though you're using it as a transactional account, put it into the HSA, $3,000, get the tax deduction. That money comes out. Now you go into the 529 plan, kind of pay the healthcare costs then, if you will, out of your own pocket. At the end of the day, you still have some sort of after-tax amount that you're paying for either healthcare or the 529 plan, but it may be a way to capture some benefits there.
Yeah, and I think before we leave HSAs, I think the only other thing that I would add would be there are caps that you would spend every year. So even though there may be higher out-of-pockets, potentially there still are caps too in terms of the amount that the maximum amount you would pay out of pocket.
Well, that depends on the plan.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think we did need to talk about HSAs in this context because they do offer an appealing option and a versatile account, I might add.
That you said is in the employer-sponsored plan space is probably underutilized by participants today, given certainly what we've seen. And even as a transactional account, much less as a potential investment
Correct.
Account.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. So when we think then about how we project these costs through or thinking about retirement, you and I are both getting to the point where maybe we're at least starting to understand a little what our costs might be in retirement or how we might start thinking about that. And how can we get started with this healthcare piece? Because, I mean, you look at studies of consumer expenditures, and healthcare is the largest or close to the largest expense for many people in retirement, in terms of broad categories. So how do we start thinking about projecting that going forward?
I guess one way to think about it would be this transition from working years into your retirement years. So one thing would be, we talked about employer plans with generous employer subsidies. So when we think about these other costs, for instance, when you think about food or housing or shelter or things like that, as you're planning for retirement, those necessarily aren't going to change when the day after you retire, for instance. Healthcare may, because if you have an employer subsidy, that subsidy may go away. And that may mean that you may be responsible for a greater out-of-pocket. So when you think about replacing that income, you might have to pay more when you retire to make up for that generous employer subsidy.
Oh, that's interesting because, that those that have benefited most, let's say they work for someone that actually subsidizes quite a lot of their healthcare expenditures, actually probably need to project more in terms of what we often call the replacement ratio, in terms of their current income, in terms of retirement expenses because of that subsidy going away. If I think about the number that I gave before, about on average about 75% of the premium is subsidized. If a family premium, just throw some numbers out there, were $10,000 a year and the employee is paying $2,500 during their working years, again, now things will change with Medicare forth, but all else equal, that would be an extra $7,500 a year of expenses that now come into play in the retirement years. That's a lot.
It is. And we actually think it's better to think about it in terms of annual cost framing as opposed to a big number at retirement. So there's a lot of what we call big scary numbers out there that quote numbers around what the healthcare costs in retirement could look like. Some quotes are a couple $100,000. Well, that's a legitimate concern. We don't think about food and housing in those types of big scary numbers either. Why would we think about healthcare in that light as well?
Yeah, I'm going to spend $5,000 a year on food or whatever it might be, but we don't like aggregate it up and say, you better save $200,000 for food
retirement. It's a useless number from a planning standpoint. So it's better to think about it in terms of what do costs potentially look like? What am I responsible for in terms of out-of-pocket? And then do the planning from there. So we talked about healthcare costs increasing dramatically with inflation. That's true, and that's a concern. But what we also see, though, is that what we call a substitution effect in terms of as you age through retirement, healthcare costs as a percentage of your overall costs may increase, but other expenses go down. So that's where the substitution effect might come into play in terms of it may balance out or net out over the years, but healthcare costs may be a greater percentage of your overall spending.
So I definitely see this in real time with my parents. You know, for example, my dad and my stepmom, who are now in their late 70s to mid 80s, 15 years ago in kind of early phases of retirement, or 10 years ago in early phases of retirement, their expenses looked very different as a basket, whereas right now it's largely housing and healthcare. It's not a lot of other costs that they have besides those. And 10, 15 years ago, there were other things in there like travel and mm-hmm. other recreation and, you know, dining out and so forth that just aren't there. So that substitution effect, yeah, healthcare costs have risen, but a lot of their other expenses have not, as they've become less mobile and less able to do those other things.
Mm-hmm. And I guess when you think about healthcare costs, break it down in terms of annual healthcare costs, those premiums out of pockets. And then the other one, which arguably could be the big scary number, is long-term care. So when we think about healthcare, it's best to decouple those two and look at healthcare costs in retirement as one aspect, and then long-term care, and understand the trade-offs there and the considerations as you're planning throughout retirement.
Well, and in the research that Vanguard has done on this topic, Maria, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier in a different context, looking at those healthcare costs and the long-term care costs, there is some predictive ability to have a sense of what those costs are. So things like what your health status is at the time of retirement, is it good, is it moderate, is it not particularly healthy, has a real big determinant on what the annual healthcare costs might be. So if you do have chronic conditions like smoking, some other emphysema, you have heart disease and so forth, you can get a sense of where things may be. It's interesting though, I mean, because you mentioned long-term care. Long-term care will often come in for people that may actually have been quite healthy at the time of retirement. So you've got this weird kind of dynamic that goes in where you may have a lot of costs for a short period of time, relatively, on average, if you're unhealthy at retirement, but you might have a greater risk for long-term care if you're very healthy at retirement. Mm-hmm. Just a weird planning process.
Well, yeah, and our research showed that about half of individuals will not incur any type of long-term care. About a fourth of individuals will incur costs that may be below $100,000, and about 15% will incur costs over $250,000. So what you can see there is that not everybody will incur long-term care shocks, but those that do, they could be significant.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, actually, most won't incur long-term care costs. Yet, I think everyone kind of fears it. Yeah, you hear about, well, what will I do with that unexpected?
Well, I think everybody has a story, too. So this is really, it is a very personal consideration. And, you know, I think individuals can look to either family or friends and stories that go along with that. When we talk about long-term care, the one thing we really haven't discussed is unpaid care options. And, you know, there's a lot of individuals who get long-term care but do through family. So really what we're zeroing in on here are paid long-term care expenses.
Yeah, which by and large tend to be, at least in a couple or in a two-person household situation, tend to be the second to die more so than the first to die. The first to die tends to have more unpaid care. Mm-hmm. That's not uniform, but I mean, on average, relative to the
second. And statistically, it's women, because women's life expectancy is greater than their male counterparts. So what we tend to see is that women have a higher occurrence of long-term care needs than men.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we didn't touch on was kind of the planning process in retirement, and actually in terms of Medicare and what kind of costs and thinking and understanding needs to be done along those lines. But I actually think we might be able to get to that with respect to a couple of client questions that we have received on healthcare topics. For example, I think this is a good lead-in to then what it means after 65 and gets to some of these Medicare questions. Jacqueline asks, what health care options would you recommend for retirees who are younger than 65 and not yet eligible for Medicare?
That's a very common question among pre-retirees, isn't it? So this, I guess I would think about it in two ways. One would be the options, but then also how much will I pay for this, right? So we talked about the employer subsidies and the loss of that, right? For somebody who's working, retiring pre-Medicare, they're going to think about how do I bridge those healthcare costs and how much am I going to pay for that? So one would be if you have an employer that allows you to have a coverage that bridges to Medicare, certainly that's one option. There may be COBRA that could get you a limited period of coverage. And the other option would be to go on to the open market and look for policies.
The healthcare exchanges.
Yes. So there you've got the choice of gold, silver, or bronze plans. I think what we tend to see probably silver plans being the more widely adopted. So that is one way how to bridge that gap between your working years and Medicare.
And then when you do get to the actual retirement piece, and I think this is pretty well encapsulated by a question that William asked, what do you recommend as to budgeting for health care? So a little bit more specific on some of the things that we've been talking about. And when he's talking about budgeting, he's thinking of both insurance costs and out-of-pocket expenses.
And I think you have to think about both of those, right? So when you think about insurance, you may either pay for it in terms of higher premiums and potentially lower out-of-pocket versus a lower premium and a higher out-of-pocket. So that's a personal decision in terms of how are you comfortable paying for that health care.
Well, and that's where those things like what's your current health status and then what combination of Medicare plan or supplemental plan or Advantage plan that comes into play. And there can differ a lot by geography, health status, as I mentioned, your income amount in terms of how much of a subsidy you might get or not get, as it were. All of those things come into play in that, which is why in many ways we partnered with Mercer and wrote this research on healthcare costs, because trying to look at that in the aggregate is extraordinarily important for being able to budget in a way like William is asking and get a good sense of these costs. And while it may seem complicated and there are a lot of moving parts, you can get pretty good in the ballpark numbers of what an annual out-of-pocket cost would be in retirement.
Yeah, no, Joel, I mean, I think you're on point. And when you think about the Medicare choice, and, you know, there are choices with Medicare. There's not just one option. And I think it does make sense to really stop and think and look at the different plans to assess the trade-off between the premiums and the potential out-of-pockets. You had mentioned the different health risk factors that go into it as well. We've done some work in the research paper, and if you look at a medium-risk individual with a supplemental F, we pick F because that is one of the plans with the highest coverage, the annual cost is $5,200. High risk is about $6,500. So that gives you a ballpark sense of what you could be looking at in terms of total out-of-pocket with a Medicare supplemental plan F. The other thing I will add is for individuals who are then considering Medicare with a supplemental, those are plans that cover the 20% that Medicare doesn't cover, that's usually a pairing when you think about insurance, but then also prescription plans, and that's the Part D.
Part D, yeah.
And again, these are, not to get into Medicare, we could spend an hour talking about that.
And maybe we will at some point.
The Medicare choice is between, you know, typically with an Advantage plan, which is kind of all in, versus traditional Medicare, plus an optional supplemental, plus a Part D plan. So there's some decision-making there that it really makes sense to stop, understand the plan choices and the costs that you're facing either with the annual premiums or out-of-pockets.
Well, and as you say, just the number of choices, the number of permutations that you could have in terms of satisfying those healthcare pieces in retirement is large. That's why we're starting to see more and more advice providers actually moving into these areas as part of this sort of financial life management, financial life advice, where things like, and we've talked about it in other podcasts, Social Security optimization, or, you know, when should I claim Social Security and how, or in this case, Medicare choice along with all of the other optional coverages and how to bundle that together for personalization or customizing that to the situation at hand. And so in many ways, that is how a lot of advice frontier is moving in the financial planning space, correct?
Absolutely. And it's not once and done either. You want to revisit. I mean, certainly once you pick your Medicare plan, but think about the supplemental and the Part D as well.
Yeah,
Part D, absolutely, you should check every year because there's, you know, not only the costs, but there's formulary drugs and the formulary list changes every year. So you really want to be proactive and understand what your plan covers and make sure on an annual basis that it's appropriate for your needs at that life stage.
There's been some academic studies done. I want to say that it was the one I'm thinking about was in the book Nudge that looked at medical plan choice broadly, and it was something like over 40%. I don't remember the exact statistic off the top of my head, but over 40% of people had chosen a wrong plan for their situation because they just simply went to a default or what was presented or what their friends did or so forth. And this can make, with the numbers that we're talking about, a significant difference in adapting the plan choice for your situation in terms of the budgeting questions that William asked.
Mm-hmm. And I will say the Medicare website is quite good. So medicare.gov is a good source of information for individuals that want to dig a little bit deeper.
If you have like 20 hours on your hands.
And the geek doesn't have 20 hours.
I'll go geek out about that. When it comes time for me to choose my Medicare plan, I will be all over that. However, I don't think I'm the normal person.
Well, I've spent some time on that website. So so for our listeners, the planner has spent some time on the website and thinks it's pretty good.
Good. So I think one other question that we get from a client standpoint that I think certainly plays into this topic, which is, how do you balance, this is from David, how do you balance retirement plan withdrawals with preparing for future healthcare expenses?
Well, this is an interesting question. It is a balancing act for many individuals. I guess a couple of things that I would think about there. We talk about strategically spending from retirement accounts, from a tax situation, and I think it's impactful here as well. The one thing I would think through here is try to keep that income down for two reasons. One, if you're on the public marketplace for insurance coverage, there are subsidies that exist, but those subsidies are based upon income thresholds. So look at the income just to see how to, if you are benefiting from subsidies, if you're on the open market in terms of purchasing your insurance, think about the impact there. The other thing I would say is once you're in retirement, Medicare Part B premiums are based upon income levels as well. So, as you know, RMDs from traditional deferred accounts are part of your taxable income, and that figure then not only determines how much you have to pay in income taxes, but it also has hidden implications or somewhat hidden implications to things like Medicare Part B premiums.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly back to the whole thing that you and I have talked about for a long time about diversifying the different sources of taxable income that you might have in the future, because then you can sort of, if you will, lightly quoted, optimize around some of those situations. So things like Roth IRA contributions and then withdrawals strategically that may not add to taxable income and therefore may not have that impact on the Medicare Part B premiums or on Social Security taxation and so forth. I mean, at the end of the day, David's really asking a question about, shouldn't I think about my total portfolio in aggregate, my total situation, as opposed to thinking of my retirement plan, my healthcare expenditure, my Social Security, my taxable account, whatever it might be. And that's exactly right. There's so many different trade-offs and interactions that you need to think about it very holistically in order to reap the benefits. Good example is the health savings account that you talked about earlier, right? Which is, okay, now, hey, can I use the health savings account in a strategic way if I had that from years ago and now in retirement? For this is mainly going to be for people in the future, but I could use that then to think about, well, now I had that retirement plan, that health cost 15 years ago. How about if I take the money for that right now? Doesn't count towards my income currently, and so doesn't affect mm-hmm. my other premiums and so forth. So, yeah, it's a very complicated situation, but at the end of the day, it's about looking at it in total.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so Joel, before we wrap up, I did want to go back. So we talked about some of the research that Vanguard has done, and the research can be found on Vanguard.com. It's called Planning for Healthcare Costs in Retirement. So I think that's a good starting point for individuals that might want to dig deeper on some of the topics that we talked about today.
Oh, I agree. It's actually a really nice touting our own book, as it were. It really is a nice paper. And again, you know, working with Mercer experts on the health employer benefit side, bringing that planning perspective into mm-hmm. it and being able to give a better sense of the annual healthcare costs and the issues with mm-hmm. long-term care as well.
Yeah, and I think the other thing in the resource corner would be, I talked about the Medicare.gov website. I'll make the final plug for that. And then also for individuals who, you know, want to personalize this more, work with, you know, a professional, an advisor, a financial planner can help personalize this a little bit more. Give us a call at Vanguard. We have advisors who, you know, can also do some of the planning with individuals as well around healthcare costs.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And kind of sum this up, it's important really to think about the fact that retirement isn't just about how much money you have. It's also about kind of what is spending, what's contributing to it, what the quality of life is, what your choices are. And so it's health and wealth. And they're very linked in many ways, as we've kind of talked about today. But it is important to think about the costs of healthcare in retirement on an annual basis, as opposed to a lump sum covering the rest of one's life. As you said, to think about it in the same way that we think about any other ongoing expense, like food and clothing mm-hmm. and housing. So, we really need to educate ourselves and assess our own situation, do our own planning, knowing that while the future is hard to predict, there are some things that we can at least plan for a little bit more directly.
All right, Joel, thank you very much. I think we covered a lot of good ground today. I hope our listeners found it useful in the resources that we talked about. To continue the retirement and retirement spending conversation, our next podcast, we're going to be covering Social Security and navigating Social Security and claiming choices.
Yeah, that's probably no less complicated than the healthcare discussion that
we had
today.
Yes, our challenge will be to make Social Security interesting, which I think I'm up for the challenge. How about you?
Go for it.
All right, thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Planner and the Geek. Just a reminder that you can find more episodes of The Planner and the Geek on iTunes and on Vanguard.com.
Or simply subscribe to our series and you won't miss an episode. And please don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Your ratings will make it easier for others to find us when they're looking for investing podcasts. Please join us next time for another episode of The Planner and the Geek.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. Copyright 2019, The Vanguard Group Incorporated, all rights reserved.